Live from Tehran, this is World News. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. It's good to have you with us. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has vowed that Tehran will make the occupation regime regret its deadly air raid on the Iran embassy in the Syrian capital. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei made the remark in a message of condolence on a martyrdom of a group of Iranian military advisors in the Monday's Israeli aerial raid on Syria. The leader described Israel as a hated occupying regime and vowed that the evil entity will be punished. Ayatollah Khamenei also saluted the martyrs of the attack, including two senior IRGC commanders, Major General Mohammad Reza Zahedi and General Mohammad Hadi Haji Rahimi. 13 people have been confirmed dead in Israel's Monday air raid on the Iran embassy in the Syrian capital. According to IRGC, the dead include two senior Iranian military personnel who are on an advisory mission to Syria and five of their accompanying officers. Meantime, Iran's Supreme National Security Council held an emergency meeting after the Israeli attack on the consular section of the Iranian embassy. It said that appropriate decisions were made over what it called another Israeli war crime against the people enjoying diplomatic immunity. Tehran also called for a UN Security Council meeting on the Israeli aggression. According to the Russian UN envoy, the Security Council will hold an emergency meeting today to discuss the attack on the Iranian embassy. The attack has violated international law and the 1961 Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations.
In a blatant violation of international laws and human norms, the Israeli regime committed a heinous crime by attacking the consular services department of the Iranian embassy in Damascus. The attack destroyed a four-story building, killing several people. Iran's ambassador to Damascus said that the crime will not go unanswered.
You can see how all the glass and windows of my room were shattered as a result of the attack while I was present in my room at that time. Some journalists were in the upper floor and witnessed it with their own eyes. We were speaking with the minister and they documented what happened in my room. The Zionist entity does not respect anything at all, and Iran will respond decisively.
The attack was met with strong condemnations from several countries at the global and regional levels. The Syrian people and their leadership insisted that such attacks must be confronted with more resilience and support for the Palestinian people and resistance movements. They affirmed that these barbaric attacks would further strengthen the bond between the Syrian and Iranian people.
We expressed our condolences for the loss of life and our sorrow over these unjustifiable attacks targeting diplomatic institutions. We emphasized the necessity of maintaining Syrian-Iranian relations because they are built on ethics and values, unlike Western countries that support Israel in committing such crimes.
Observers believe that the attack is a violation of international law and humanitarian principles and is a result of the regime's military defeat in its genocidal war on Gaza. They say such crimes increases the determination of the region's peoples to achieve victory and expel this cancerous entity. Even the peoples of the world have come to realize the criminality and brutality of Israel.
This Israeli entity, which by Western standards is regarded as the oasis of democracy in West Asia, only knows the democracy of killing, crimes, destruction, targeting children, women, residential buildings, and violating international law. This was evident in the targeting of the diplomatic consulate building.
Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps says seven of its officers, two of whom were brigadier generals, were killed in the attack.
Today's aggression is further evidence of the savagery and disrespect for international law exhibited by this criminal entity. This regime's behavior underscores the need for a firm response by the international community. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
Now in our news review program, we've discussed the deadly Israeli air raid on the consular section of the Iran embassy in Damascus. The attack already sparked global condemnations. Let's see what our guests had to say.
Okay, let's discuss this a little further with our guests who are joining us for this. We have with us Dr. Fuad Izadi. He is a professor at the University of Tehran. Also joining us is Isha Krishnaswamy, podcaster and a journalist. Welcome to you both. Fouad Azadi, let me first start with you. We're looking at this terrorist act that Iran has called to have occurred, and obviously it has broken international rules regarding targeting an embassy by the Israeli regime in this case. But what are the further ways of interpreting this when it comes to the way that the Israeli regime has reacted, which is unprecedented in terms of targeting not only the consulate, but also the fact that it belongs to the Islamic Republic of Iran?
Obviously, the genocidal regime in Palestine is trying to widen the war. They want to have United States and Iran enter into a military confrontation. They have failed miserably in their genocidal policies and practices in Gaza. They have only managed to kill women and children, destroy houses. They have achieved none of their goals. Their goals are not achievable, to be honest with you. In order to put the attention on something else, they engage in this type of terrorist activities, and they are not going to be successful in this venture either. They are just showing the fact that they're criminals, they engage in war crimes, they engage in genocide, they engage in, you know, you don't use an airplane to attack a consulate in a foreign country. Overall, what we see is the true nature of the genocidal regime, and the more they engage in these type of activities, the more they show their true face. What Iran is doing is following international law. The Iranian government has asked for an emergency meeting of the UN Security Council. UN Security Council has an opportunity to address this issue seriously. I doubt it, given the fact that another criminal regime, the United States, has a veto power in the Security Council, and the airplane that was used was an American airplane. The missiles that were used were American missiles. The money that was used was American money, and Americans are as much responsible for this criminal act as Israelis are. So Iran will follow international law, and also Iran will engage in activities to make sure this type of behavior is not repeated. So what Netanyahu is doing is trying to save his job, but I think he is making the end of Israel closer than what we think.
All right, so there's a lot of issues here, Isha, that we need to break open. One of them is the fact that, you know, it's said that the U.S. does not want to engage in a war with Iran, and that Israel is doing what it can with this in terms of a provocation to get Iran not only engaged militarily, but to pull in the U.S. How can they even think of that when they can't even be successful in the genocidal war in the Gaza Strip, which is obviously not even close to the strength that Iran has?
I think it is just because of that. So they need more and more partners to be drawn into this war. And an interesting thing is about 25 years ago this week, the U.S. started bombing Belgrade, Serbia, and they too bombed the Chinese embassy. So I think the precedent was set in that act. I just was thinking about that. Israel needs more partners in order to that can rain overwhelming firepower. So it seems like they're using the same strategy that many of the moderate rebels used in Syria when they faked chemical attacks. And it was a strategy to draw the West in on some kind of fake human rights violations. But with Iran, they're hoping that Iran reacts in a more militaristic way. And then people in power who do want a war with Iran, just not the Biden administration right now. So there is a bit of an internal conflict in the U.S. with those who want to focus on China and those who want to strengthen the U.S. Occupation bases in the Middle East. And a lot of them have a really intense and strong relationship with the Netanyahu regime. And they also form the biggest Zionist lobby, and the majority of them are Christian extremists. So the biggest Zionist lobby is Christians for Zionism. And so there are forces that, if given enough provocation, will be able to win the internal battle within the United States. And I think that's what Israel is hoping for.
All right. Thank you for that. Isha Krishnaswamy, their podcaster and journalist. We appreciate your comments. And Dr. Fuad Azadi, their professor at the University of Tehran. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this news review.
Now moving on, Iranian security forces have arrested two Takfir terrorists linked to the so-called Daesh K or Daesh Khorasan terrorist group. According to Iranian media, the individuals are planning to enter a holy shrine in the Iranian city of Qom. The Daesh K is a branch of Daesh terrorist group that's active in Afghanistan and Pakistan. It's responsible for numerous deadly operations targeting civilians, including women and children. An Israeli airstrike has left dead seven international aid workers associated with a U.S.-based charity World Central Kitchen in the Gaza Strip.
The WCK team was traveling in a deconflicted zone in two armored cars branded with the WCK logo and a soft-skin vehicle. Despite coordinating movements with the IDF, the convoy was hit as it was leaving the Deir al-Balah warehouse, where the team had unloaded more than 100 tons of humanitarian food aid brought to Gaza on the maritime route.
The head of the charity says that she's heartbroken and appalled over the loss of her team in the targeted attack in Gaza. Erin Gore called the airstrike unforgivable, saying that the attack was not only on World Central Kitchen, but on humanitarian bodies showing up in the direst of situations where food is being used as a weapon of war. The organization also announced it's halting all operations in the region. Meantime, Hamas has slammed the attack, saying that a regime is pursuing the policy of systematic killings to terrorize aid workers and disrupt humanitarian operations. Since the onset of the war in Gaza in early October, more than 32,900 Palestinians have been killed, mainly women and children. Motiba Musabe joined us earlier from Deir al-Balah in Gaza City with an update on the situation in the war-ravaged strip. It says Israel has continued with the strikes against residential buildings across the besieged territory.
So the Israeli forces committed at least seven appalling massacres, claiming the lives of 71 Palestinian civilians, in addition to injuring roughly 130 others. These numbers actually took the whole number of the Palestinian civilians who have been killed since the beginning of this onslaught on Gaza Strip to roughly 32,920 Palestinian civilians. Over the last couple of hours, the Israeli warplanes destroyed a residential building in the eastern part of Deir al-Balah city, particularly in Abu al-Ajin town, which is located in the eastern part of Deir al-Balah city. But while when it comes to Khan Yunis city, the western part of Khan Yunis city, particularly the vicinity and the surrounding areas of the Nasser Medical Complex, witnessed more destruction as more residential buildings were blown up by the Israeli occupation forces in that area, while the eastern part of Khan Yunis witnessed also another Israeli airstrikes and attacks against the residential buildings there. When it comes to Rafah city, the number of the Palestinian civilians who were killed over the last attack that took place during the last night amounted to 10 Palestinian civilians, including five Palestinian children, after they were attacked while they were sleeping inside their house. The Israeli occupation forces destroyed their house over their heads.
Now, meantime, Palestinians in the West Bank have endured intensified raids since the beginning of the Israeli regime's war on Gaza. Occupation forces have carried out fresh raids on towns, villages, and refugee camps across the occupied territories. Our correspondent there has more.
The Israeli troops stormed several villages, East Qalqilya, as well as South Qalqilya, like Jayus, Azun, and Habli, as well as Asli village. During the incursions to these villages, the Israeli troops stormed the Palestinians' homes, confiscated belongings, caused damage within the houses, and arrested a number of Palestinians. The Israeli troops had also stormed several areas around Al-Quds, like the refugee camp of Qalandia, for several hours. Exchange of fire have taken place between the Israeli forces and the residents of the refugee camp. The troops stormed the home of Mohammed Manasra, martyr Mohammed Manasra. He carried out an anti-Israeli operation in near the settlement of Aili, and he was shot and killed. Today, again, the Israeli forces stormed his home during this operation, and during the exchange of fire, a number of Palestinians had been wounded by the Israeli forces. At least 7 Palestinians were arrested from Qalandia, a refugee camp. The Israeli troops in southern the occupied West Bank raided several towns in Al-Khalil area, raided the town of Beit Omar, and arrested at least one Palestinian, according to reports coming from Beit Omar. 14-year-old Palestinian was arrested by the Israeli forces. During the military raid to Qalandia refugee camp, the Israeli forces stormed Palestinians' homes and gathered dozens of Palestinian youths inside the refugee camp, interrogated them and questioned them.
Islamic resistance in Iraq has staged a fresh raid on Israeli positions in response to the regime's genocide in the Gaza Strip. The umbrella resistance group says the attacks reaffirmed determination to go on striking Israeli strongholds. Our correspondent has a report from Baghdad.
The Islamic resistance in Iraq has been standing in solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza by carrying out retaliatory operations in the region. Resistance forces in Iraq have started their operations by striking a number of U.S. military bases in Iraq and Syria in response to Washington's support for Israel. The operations have now entered a new phase as Israeli positions have been directly targeted in various locations such as Haifa, Eilat, and elsewhere. The intensification of the attacks on Israeli positions shows that the massacres being committed by the regime in Gaza will not remain unanswered. The second phase of the operations, which directly targeted Israeli positions, proves that regional resistance groups are able to inflict serious damage to Israel's maritime and airspace interests.
Resistance groups in Iraq and across the region have proved their ability to respond to the Israeli crimes against innocent civilians. They vow that their operations will intensify even more as long as the genocidal war on Gaza continues. Muslim Salem, Baghdad.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
The Limelight.
The Washington Post reported that the United States has green-lighted the transfer of billions of dollars worth of bombs and fighter jets to the Zionist regime. According to the report, the new arms package includes more than 8,800 MK-84 2,000-pound bombs and 500 MK-82 500-pound bombs, according to Pentagon and Department of State officials. Some of the bombs approved have previously been associated with high casualty counts in the Gaza Strip. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, in recent days, the Biden administration approved a shipment of fighter jets and bombs worth billions of dollars to Israel, a new report shows. This decision came despite Washington's apprehensions regarding a possible military operation in southern Gaza's Rafah, which poses a significant risk to the lives of hundreds of thousands of Palestinian civilians. According to the Washington Post report, the latest arms shipments to Israel encompass over 1,800 MK-84 bombs, each weighing 2,000 pounds, and 500 MK-82 bombs, each weighing 500 pounds. The Post reported, citing U.S. officials who chose to remain anonymous, that the 2,000-pound bombs have previously been associated with significant casualties during Israel's military actions in Gaza. The MK-84 and MK-82 bombs, which were approved for transfer this week, had received congressional approval years earlier, though their delivery had not been completed until now. The 2,000-pound bombs, which can demolish city blocks and create craters wider than 40 feet, are rarely used anymore by Western militaries in densely populated locations due to the risk of civilian casualties, the Post reported. According to the newspaper, a State Department official said that fulfilling an authorization from one notification to Congress can result in dozens of individual foreign military sales cases across the decades-long life cycle of the congressional notification. The official told the Post, as a matter of practicality, major procurements, like Israel's F-35 program, for example, are often broken out into several cases over many years. Earlier this month, the Washington Post reported that the U.S. had approved more than 100 separate arms sales to Israel since October 7th and did so without having to notify Congress. Last week, Middle East Eye reported that the U.S. was planning to move ahead with several major arms transfers to the Zionist regime. Part of the package of arms transfers that the U.S. would notify to Congress is a new shipment of precision-guided munitions worth more than $1 billion. In addition to that sale, the U.S. planned to move ahead With a $2.5 billion sale of F-35 fighter jets, Josh Paul, the former director of Congressional and Public Affairs for the State Department's Bureau of Political Military Affairs, said. The report from the Washington Post comes after a U.S. State Department official said recently that the famine likely exists in certain parts of northern Gaza, with other regions at risk of descending into starvation. This statement came a day following the world's highest court's directive for Israel to allow the entry of food aid into the area. A State Department official told Reuters, "While we can say with confidence that famine is a significant risk in the south and center, but not present in the north, it is both a risk and quite possibly is present in at least some areas." A State Department official said that the count of trucks delivering aid in southern and central Gaza had almost hit 200 daily, marking a rise from the previous month. However, an even greater number of trucks was required. Anadolu agency also reported U.S. President Joe Biden has secretly authorized billions of dollars in new bombs and fighter jets for the Zionist regime in recent days, according to a report published recently. The Zionist regime's war on Gaza continues to rage with widespread destruction, displacement, and death throughout the coastal enclave. Tel Aviv regime has vowed to take its offensive to the southern city of Rafah, where some 1.5 million displaced people have sought refuge, despite warning of the humanitarian fallout that would ensue. The planes and engines are estimated to be worth around $2.5 billion. The sales have not been notified publicly, and there are no corresponding announcements on the War Security Cooperation Agency's website where such notifications are normally posted.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
The audience of IRB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. May Allah accept your du'as and worships in the month of Ramadan. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Ja'far Ja'far.
I begin in the name of Allah, the most kind, the most merciful. It's due to that kindness and mercy that we have these opportunities where we gather in remembrance and glorification of Him, Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. I pray all of you are well, that you are healthy inshallah, and that you are ready for putting our best foot forward in what's considered to be the greatest night of the entire year for us inshallah. We have reached, you know, now the summit of this month, that everything within this month is great, but there is one night that is even greater than all other nights within this month. And it's the night of Qadr. As Allah Azza wa Jal says, Laylatul Qadri khayrum min alfi shahr. That the night of Qadr is better than 1,000 months. It is true that we have different dates for the nights of Qadr, but our hadith literature has narrowed it down for us from the 19th, 21st, and 23rd nights. And then most emphasis has been placed on this night, inshallah, that we will be given, inshallah, enough life to participate in by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And it's this night that the Qur'an, if the hadith and this matches together, this is the night in which where the Qur'an says that this night is better than 1,000 months. You know, the idea of 1,000 months is a fascinating discussion, right? Like, what is it, 1,000 months? Whenever the Quran mentions a number, especially a large number like this, there's different opinions as far as what it could possibly mean, right? It's either a number that represents kathra, just a lot. And so God puts a number out there for it to mean a lot. And so this night is better than basically any number you can throw out there. That many months. That's how great this particular night is. Or it could refer to the time itself, which is 83 years, isn't it? 83.33 years, which in itself could refer to as a lifetime, basically. And so one way to understand it, and I think it's really powerful, is that this night is equivalent to a lifetime. Yeah, that this night can change a life if we want it to change a life. You know, and so it's really important how we participate and how we engage in this month. As we will talk about, inshallah, before the amal, you know, this, yes, there's amal, there's du'as. You know, oftentimes we are told, we focus on quality over quantity, but the quality, if at all possible on this night, should run through the entire night. Yeah? It is not a night where you say, well, I did an hour of quality, now I'm done. Right? It is a too blessed of a night for us to say that I am going to do something else besides spend time in seeking closeness to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It doesn't have to be taxing, it doesn't have to be excruciating, you know, because sometimes, as the hadith that we talked about of Imam, you know, like, obedience to God can be painstaking for many, you know. Like I was having a discussion with somebody today, you know, that as opposed to reading 30 minutes of Quran, yeah, ooh, these are two different things, you know. 30 minutes of Quran is going to feel like 300 minutes, you know, while 30 minutes of watching a food video is going to feel like 5 minutes, right? It's because of how we are, what we are attracted to, right? What the heart likes, and this is why social media and these type of things are so effective. They know what makes the brain click, you know what I mean? So tonight, like, if at all possible, like, if you don't feel like you can continue in ibadat, and again, the ibadat can be of different types. It could just be sitting in silence as ibadat in this month, you know? Tasbih can be ibadat. Quran, du'as, we will be here basically till almost Fajr anyways tonight doing different things, right? But don't waste tonight doing something that you could look back and say, man, that half an hour could have given me 5 more daraja in Jannah, for example, right? Because it is available tonight. It is better than 1,000 months. So tonight, if you're not going to do anything and you can't stay up, then just go to sleep. But don't waste your time doing these different things. What we'll talk about, so like this night also, if you look at it being equal to 1,000 months, that means anything we do on this night, the you can multiply that by doing that same act for 1,000 nights in 1,000 months, and the reward would be greater. Subhanallah, can you imagine that number? It's huge, right? So like if you give charity tonight, and this is one of the recommended things to do, this sadaqah is worth more than if you gave it for 1,000 nights in 1,000 months, this one night of sadaqah, right? That dollar is going to go real far, right? Istighfar will go real far. A verse of the Quran will go real far. And so again, it's a beautiful night. It's a night in which angels are descending, and so we want to make sure that we maximize it. So that's one idea. I want you to sit on it, reflect on it, and try to see how you will spend that night. It should have been a well-planned evening, you know, where if you could delay going into work tomorrow or not go to work, this is one of those nights we should take off, you know. And so hopefully we planned well and we can enjoy the benefits of this night. Sallu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Salli ala Muhammadin wa Ali Muhammad. So that's one point of reflection. Another point of reflection is about the Quran, right? Whether what makes this month special and what makes this night special more than anything else is that it is the night in which the Quran was revealed. Now, the idea that this Quran, where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, you know, لَوْ أَنزَلْنَا هَذَا الْقُرْآنَ عَلَىٰ جَبَلٍ لَرَأَيْتَهُ خَاشِعًا مُتَصَدِّعًا مِنْ خَشْيَةِ اللَّهِ, that he says that if this Quran was sent down upon a mountain, you would see it humble and crumble out of being in awe of Allah. Yeah? That there was nothing in this world that could encapsulate and hold the message of the Quran except the heart of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. And this is where we understand the greatness of our Prophet. Yeah, that on this night, not only are we celebrating and marking the revelation of the Quran, at the same time we are glorifying God for creating a banda, a servant like the Prophet who could grasp the Holy Quran. Yeah, that these two go hand in hand together. And this elevates for us and makes us understand how unique the maqam of the Prophet is. You know, to appreciate it even more. This is the beauty of our Prophet. Yeah, and this is why on this night when we gather, it's not just a celebration of the Quran coming down, but it's really a glorification to Allah for sending a human being as beautiful as Rasulullah to teach us the message that he sent. Yeah, because if it were not for him, we would still be confused. Yeah, were it not for him, we would still remain in darkness. These are some points that I want us to understand and appreciate. Do as much as you can tonight, right? And at the same time, send as much salawat as you can upon the Prophet and his family tonight. Because these are the things and actions that will add a tremendous effect on our balances and our bank accounts.
Dear listeners of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, you can follow this program entitled Minbar every day in the month of Ramadan. If you have any suggestion, you can send us your email at englishradio@irib.ir.
Love is everywhere, so much peace fills up the air. Ramadan, month of the Quran, I feel it inside me, strengthening my iman. But how I wish you'd be here with me all year around. Ramadan, 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 ya Habib. Ramadan, Ramadan, laytaka dawman qareeb, laytaka dawman qareeb.
Imam Ali, peace be upon him, said, "The Lord Most High has chosen for us certain followers, Shiites, who assist us. If we are joyful, they are joyful. And if we are sorrowful and sad, they are sorrowful and sad."
the limelight.
A top Senate Republican from Florida, Marco Rubio, has defended Donald Trump's claim of presidential immunity. Trump faces 88 charges across 4 criminal cases and denies all wrongdoing. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster ABC News has covered this story and tells us more. Florida's Marco Rubio, a top Senate Republican, on Sunday largely defended Donald Trump's claims of immunity against prosecution as the former president faces multiple criminal trials heading into the 2024 election. Marco Rubio, who is reported to be one of the people under consideration to be Donald Trump's running mate this year, seemed to walk a narrow tightrope in addressing Trump and several other issues in an interview with This Week co-anchor Jonathan Karl. Pressed about the former president's argument that he deserves total legal immunity for conduct whilst in office, Marco Rubio conceded that Trump couldn't go out and basically kill one of the members of the staff overnight inside the White House, which the senator called an absurd hypothetical. But he contended that many of the prosecutions against Donald Trump are unjust, and other presidents could face similar problems. I do think there's a legitimate issue here that we need to talk about writ large, Rubio told Jonathan Karl. Donald Trump faces 88 total charges across 4 criminal cases and denies all wrongdoing. The question of his immunity will be argued before the U.S. Supreme Court in late April. Federal prosecutors have challenged Trump's sweeping claim to protection from prosecution for his actions whilst he was president, including his push to overturn the 2020 election results. The Florida Republican Marco Rubio framed the matter differently on Sunday, 24th of March. Do we want to live in a country where basically the opponents of a president can extort them, can have leverage over them during their entire presidency and say, don't worry, once you're out of office, we're going to prosecute you, we're going to come after you, we're going to charge you for this crime. We're living in a country now where basically if you're a president, now you have to think to yourself, I've got to be careful what I do as a president, not even legal or illegal, even on policy. Jonathan Karl noted that you should be careful not to break the law as president, but Marco Rubio pivoted by arguing that partnership is motivating some of the cases against Trump, which prosecutors deny. Senator Marco Rubio also tried to balance his remarks on the 6th of January 2021 riot at the Capitol, criticizing those who assaulted law enforcement, whilst also suggesting that some people were being egregiously charged for merely entering the complex, though doing so required joining a chaotic mob scene involving police lines, broken windows, and a battering of the Capitol building. Jonathan Karl asked Senator Rubio on This Week about his opinion of the 6th of January rioters in the light of Donald Trump praising them as patriots, even indicating he will pardon those who have been convicted if he's elected president again. What I do think is that people that went into the Capitol and committed crimes of violence or had zip ties and all that are different from someone who walked into an open door. I think they should have prioritized and only prosecuted the people who committed acts of violence, Rubio said. Pressed by Jonathan Karl on reports that he's being considered for Donald Trump's vice presidential pick, Rubio demurred, saying he hasn't talked with the former president about that, but would be honored to join him on the ticket this year. When Karl raised the falling out between Donald Trump and his vice president Mike Pence over Pence's refusal to reject their election loss, and the fact that Mike Pence was singled out by some participants on 6th of January 2021, Marco Rubio deflected by touting Trump's overall record as president. Rubio said he felt the country was safer and more prosperous compared to what he called numerous crises under current President Joe Biden. Senator Rubio, who is a top Republican on the Senate Intelligence Committee, also sounded the alarm about the recent attack in Moscow, which has been blamed on Daesh terrorists, also known as ISIS terrorists. Rubio said ISIS could pose a danger to America, in part because of what he called Biden's policy failures with the high number of migrants at the southern border with Mexico. Rubio warned specifically about human traffickers at the border, whom federal officials have said have ties to ISIS or Daesh terrorists. They would love to do what they did in Moscow here inside the United States, and it's something we have to be very vigilant about, Senator Rubio said. Senator Rubio also hedged on Donald Trump's recent comments, however, that any Jew who votes for Democrats hates their religion. The American newspaper The Hill has also covered the same story and tells us more. Senator Marco Rubio, a Republican from Florida, defended former President Donald Trump's claims that he is immune from prosecution for actions surrounding the 6th of January Capitol riots, saying presidents are under undue political pressure from potential future prosecution. Donald Trump's attorneys are set to argue the case before the U.S. Supreme Court next month, claiming the former president should not be charged. I do think there's a legitimate issue here that we need to talk about writ large, especially after what we've seen in the last 3 years, Senator Rubio said on Sunday, 24th of March, in ABC's This Week program. Do we want to live in a country where basically the opponents of the president can kind of extort them, can have leverage over them during their entire presidency and say, don't worry, once you're out of office, we're going to prosecute you, or we're going to come after you, charge you with this crime or that crime. We're living in a country now where basically, if you're president now, you have to think to yourself, I've got to be careful what I do as president, not even legal or illegal, even on policy. Donald Trump's attorneys have made similar arguments in their plea for immunity in a Supreme Court filing last week. They argued immunity would protect the president from de facto blackmail. A denial of criminal immunity would incapacitate every future president with de facto blackmail and extortion while in office, and condemn him to years of post-office trauma at the hands of political opponents, the court filing reads. The bleak scenario would result in a weak and hollow president and would thus be ruinous for American political system as a whole. That vital consideration alone resolves the question presented in favor of dismissal of this case, the court filing continues. The Florida Senator Marco Rubio and former Trump primary challenger used the opportunity to blast the other legal cases against Donald Trump as politically motivated, specifically calling out New York Attorney General Letitia James. Look at these prosecutions that are coming about. You've got this lady, a clear partisan in New York, who's basically prosecuting the president over loans, something that's never been done to anybody before, Rubio said. That's just one example. They're trying to bankrupt Donald Trump and put him in jail.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
مجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
In this episode, we want to present to you an extract from the speech of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, about Imam Ali alayhi salam. The commander of the faithful words and addresses, full of enthusiasm and full of wisdom, have provided instructive lessons for all humans to live by to this day. And these are all signs of his strengths. His robust physique, intellect, determination, management, and style of rhetoric were all indications of a strong and powerful individual. At the same time, this strong man was wrong. Signs of oppression against him could be witnessed in the behavior of his enemies and the envious. They could be witnessed in the unfair accusations that were leveled against him by the agents of his enemies during his lifetime and in the materialistic behavior of some of his companions. A number of his companions and comrades broke away from him because they pursued their materialistic desires. These are hints of oppression against that great personality. The burdens that were exerted on him from various sides were so vast that this patient, ocean-like heart of a man was so tolerant that he is said to have complained into a well. He would open up into a well. These instances are all indications of the persecution faced by the commander of the faithful.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد
The world of Islam has one single prescription today
and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
After his demise and martyrdom, his enemies, who had seized the government, would insult him for many years at their podiums. They would insult him throughout that vast country. They would speak harshly of the commander of the faithful, who was the embodiment of piety, justice, and fair-mindedness. Coincidentally, when we take a general look at those events, we see in that prolonged battle, the commander of the faithful was the final victor. Today, notice where the commander of the faithful's name and personality stands in this vast human panorama and history. He stands at the peak, and there is no trace of his enemies. His Nahjul Balagha, which was compiled by Sayyid al-Razi, one of the Shiite scholars, is an instructive lesson for heightened individuals. His tradition is the most important and prominent tradition after that of the Holy Prophet of Islam. His form of justice and his great personality were outstanding features in this day and age. His cause defeated that of his enemies. He was the final victor.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Riza, peace be upon him, has said, "If you are filled with joy when you are with us, the Ahlul Bayt, in the upper reaches of the heaven, then be sorrowful when we are sad, and be joyous when we are joyous."